Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning, and that means the movie reviews are going to be coming up with Eric and Colin. And my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And it is that time of year to bust out the scary sound CD, which people were wondering about. We have, you know, we all know that that these guys have been vocal.
Look into my eyes. Gotcha.
And people were wondering where the scary sound CD is. Well, we have it, and we'll be playing some of it, including the classic screaming dude.
Wrong switch, Igor.
There you go. Happy Halloween, everybody. Yeah. All right. So we're going to also talk about the Sears catalog, the old school Sears catalog, and a lot more. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. That's our phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Let's say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagru. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
Good. Real good. How was your wedding?
Wonderful.
Yeah?
Just all around great 48, 72 hours. Just everything went very well, and we had a blast. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Very, very, very cool. I spent the last 6 hours or so hanging out with Dana DiLorenzo.
Very nice.
My future ex-wife. And if you ever get a chance to hang out with Dana DiLorenzo for 6 hours, you should do it, because it's pretty awesome. And have you ever been to the Soho House?
I have not.
You know what it is?
Yes.
It's a crazy place.
Yes.
I mean, it's crazy. And it's private, and you have to have like you have to be a member. I don't know what the hell I was doing there, but it's a crazy place. It's awesome, but it's weird. So. It's definitely not my scene. You know what I mean? It's just like, I was like, what am I? I can't touch anything. I don't want to hurt anyone but it's a crazy place. And all rooms, crazy rooms everywhere. So, anyway, that's where I spent the last few hours.
Right on.
Yeah. So, anyway, Dana's great. She's the best. She was in town for a wedding.
There was a girl that kind of looked like Dana at the wedding. And I did a double take twice.
Well, she's awesome, though. So, anyway, this was a fun Sunday. That's all I'm saying. It was a real fun Sunday. She's the best. So, she goes back to, she's been staying in Ohio now, and back and forth, she's got some stuff in storage in LA, and she's, doing auditions and all kinds of stuff. She's keeping busy, but, she's going to get back to the Midwest a little bit sooner than that now. So, which is good, which is really good. So, let's go into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, sir.
How are you?
Very well.
Good.
How rested, heart is full, ready to go.
And
it was a good weekend.
Good weekend?
I got blackout curtains installed.
Oh!
Which, for us night shift workers. Yeah, I got new blackout curtains installed.
Uh-huh.
And then yesterday I hung out with family in Woodstock.
Oh, good.
Had a built a little campfire out in the back. And yeah, it was great. And had the little kids around, running around. It was fun.
You know what? Speaking of campfires, there was a fireplace, an outdoor fireplace on the roof of the Soho. And it was dying by the time we got up there. Dana and I got up there and we're hanging out.
Yeah.
And she was obsessed with getting the fire going again and spent like 20 minutes trying to get the fire going.
Oh, really? A guest can just stoke the fire?
Yeah. She was out there with and she's like mad because it wasn't, she was like, because Dana, when wants something, Dana gets it.
Really?
And so she was like messing around trying to get the fire going. And when she got a little flame, she was happy. And then when it went out, she was mad again. Yeah. But I watched her stoke a fire for about 20 minutes, which was a lot of fun for me.
It sounds fun.
Yeah. So that's speaking of campfires. So, all right. So anyway, we're here and we're here till 5 a.m. And the phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. I got some interesting movies to talk about, and we'll do the box office as well. That new Halloween movie made gangbuster money over the weekend. Made a lot of money over the weekend. And We'll talk about that and whether we liked it or not, too. So that's Eric Childress, Colin Suter. They join me every week to talk movies, and that's exactly what we'll do right after we break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. Nick DiGilio here, and 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. And we're going to jump into the movie reviews here, too, talking about the new movies this week. And then Erica stick around and we will talk box office as well. So our phone number is 312-981-7200. And we're going to bust out the scary sound CD, everybody. Get ready. Prepare yourself for the lovely tradition. So that's coming up. Let's talk about the movies, though. The brand new movies, Eric Childress, Colin Suter, they join me every week to talk about the new releases. And then we'll talk box office as well. So let's welcome the guys to the show. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Well, let's see. Let's get right to it. Eric, why don't you tell us about The Guilty?
Okay, this is a Danish film that premiered at Sundance this year and was part of our Chicago Critics Film Festival in May. It's a story of a police dispatcher who has kind of been demoted for some incident that we don't have all the details on, but he's sort of being punished, so he is relegated to dispatcher duty. And the story takes place over the course of a single evening as we watch him not just interact with his colleagues that he has some, you know, the differences with, but also the various calls that he takes. You know, we kind of watch him kind of not exactly be the, you know, most 911 dispatchers you call and they, you know, they help you through a problem or they, you know, they get on it right away. This guy is sometimes a little more judgmental. He sometimes delays help when sometimes people need it due to bad decisions that they've made. But then he gets a real pickle of a call involving a woman who may be in some certain danger. He's determined to help her out, figure out exactly what is going on with her, the details of which I do not want to divulge too much of. But it's as this movie takes the story unfolds over the course of this evening, we discover that there's more to not just this call, but also what's going on in this guy's personal life sort of led him to this moment. They kind of converge in a way. This is a really striking feature. It's not just all about what goes down with this call and, you know, the various, you know, instances of suspense that that you know, kind of just build up as a result of this thing. They're, you know, so they lose touch every once in a while, trying to get a hold of her or get back in touch with her and find out exactly where she might be. So it has a mystery element to it, but that's only kind of part of the story. There's, you know, something much deeper going on here about human nature and how we kind of judge each other. It's a really well put together film, just under 90 minutes long. It brisks along, and it's the kind of movie that, you know, it seems like it's going to go one direction, but it's actually, you know, going for something a lot more interesting about human nature. It's a really good film called The Guilty.
Okay, and that's it's at the Siskel Center. If people want to check it out, it's at the Siskel Center. So there you go. And that was it. You said it was at Sundance.
Yeah, premiered at Sundance, and then we brought it to the Music Box in May.
Wow. Okay. Cool. All right. Colin, did you see it?
Yeah, I did, and I agree. It's an excellent film, and it's kind of belongs in that same genre or whatever you want to call it of, you know, these kind of one man show movies like the one Tom Hardy was in a while ago,
right.
And then the 127 Hours. It's like that kind of, or Buried with Ryan Reynolds. It's like that kind of movie. It's just one actor basically you're watching through most of it, and yeah, it's really good.
All right, cool. So that's The Guilty. And you can see it at the Siskel Center. And a couple of good reviews right there. All right. Colin, why don't you tell us about Free Solo?
All right. Well, it would seem that this is just another documentary about mountain climbing, and we've had a few of those over the years. We had actually one this year called Mountain, which I reviewed a few months ago. But this one is more personal in a kind of man-on-wire sort of way. It's about a guy named Alex Honnold, who does what is called free solo climbing, which is climbing without the aid of a rope or pulleys or any of that stuff. It's just basically you and a rock. So it's, you know, one of the toughest rocks to climb in this fashion is El Capitan in Yosemite. And it becomes an obsession for him to conquer this. It's an obsession for a lot of climbers to want to conquer this thing. So the filmmakers follow this guy for, I think, a year or maybe longer or a little shorter, but they spend a lot of time with him, as he practices with a rope, and tries to give it a go, but then decides not to, and all while enjoying his first real relationship with a woman who understands why he does what he does. It's part of why she fell in love with him, but also really can't bear to watch. Much like us in the audience at times. But it's interesting to see how she changes him and makes him kind of a better person. And that's what this movie's really about. It really is about how he, you know, has kind of gone through his life, just sort of, you know, having these kinds of obsessions of doing these kinds of things, and then having somebody come along and just kind of ground him a little bit and make him realize, like, there's more important things in life. But nevertheless, there's, you know, he's one of these guys who's just not going to be happy until he tries this thing and conquers it. So that's what I mean when it's kind of like a man on wire sort of thing. There's just something drawing him to this and to get it done. And so, you know, like a lot of mountain climbing documentaries or movies, it's there's a lot of perilous moments in it. There are a lot of scenes that are just, you're on the edge of your seat, your palms are sweaty. And the last 20 minutes of this movie is certainly no exception. I mean, this is very much like watching Man on Wire or even The Walk again in 3D IMAX, although this is not 3D or IMAX. Certainly kind of should feel that way.
Yeah.
And I like that it's more of a personal film, and it's not just this guy in this mountain. There's a lot more going on. We really do learn a lot about this guy. We really like him, and we kind of root for him. And, you know, we also root for his girlfriend, who is doing her best to, like, you know, keep him grounded a little bit. And so you really get the dramatic effect of this whole thing, really what it means and what's at stake. And while also kind of being on the edge of your seat. So this is one that I very much recommend. And on the big screen, if you can.
It's playing at Music Box, River East, the Arclight, Century in Evanston, in Northbrook, and Marcus Addison Cinema. So it's playing in 6 theaters, so that's cool.
Yeah. That's a big ringing endorsement for a documentary.
Yeah. All right. I would probably freak out. Because I'm not real good.
Yeah.
I'm not real good with the heights.
So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. So that's Free Solo, and that's out right now, too. All right, guys, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Eric and Colin are here, and they join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. And when we come back, we got more movies to review, and then Eric's going to stick around, and we'll talk box office as well. So that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. And it's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We're going to unearth the scary sound CD. We're going to talk about the old Sears catalog. Yeah, part of that and much more here. And the phone lines are 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So, yes, and it is time for the movie reviews. Now let's get back to it. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to talk movies. And then Eric's going to stick around, and we'll talk box office after that. So let's get the guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, tell us about The Oath.
Okay, well, this is the directorial debut of comedian and actor Ike Barinholtz, who also stars in the movie, along with Tiffany Haddish, who plays his wife. And it's a story of a guy that is living in the United States, wherein they have a president who has asked the country to sign a loyalty oath. Again, this is fiction. Needless to say, he has a very liberal mindset and is no interest in being a part of this. He believes it is against his First Amendment rights. But, you know, he's kind of slowly sees the people around him, people he works with, people he knows, particularly members of his own family, who are willing to sign this pledge. There's no necessary punishment for not signing the pledge, but people who do will get, you know, certain amenities from their taxes and benefits and things like that. So the movie is set right around the few of the days right before and after Thanksgiving, which leads to a very tense family dinner. We all hear about the Thanksgivings from hell, but this movie actually features one because involves, as many families do, differing politics. Him and his wife are very liberal-leaning. His parents are a little more conservative. His brothers, played by his actual brother, is incredibly conservative, and he brings with him kind of a dingbat girlfriend with him who's even worse. But he does have a liberal sister, played by Carrie Brownstein, who is there to sort of calm the waters a little bit. And so this movie then takes even further turns when a couple of government officials, played by John Cho and Billy Magnuson from Game Night, show up, and after having received a complaint about Barinholtz's character possibly coercing someone to not sign the loyalty oath. Needless to say, this is a comedy, and it turns into a very dark comedy at times, and it's one that I enjoyed pretty immensely, actually. I was laughing quite a bit during this film. This is a film that is certainly very much about our times. While, you know, He Who Should Not Be Named is not named in the film, it's very much a fictional president. You know, everything that's going on in this country right now is just steaming from the screen and everything that goes on. You know, sometimes, you know, the dialogue sometimes is very on the nose. You know exactly what team you are on while you're watching this movie. And I think this movie, you know, has a number of some great satiric stuff going on in it. It's not just an us versus them kind of thing. It actually kind of, you know, leans a little bit that sometimes, you know, paranoid liberals can get a little too paranoid for their own good. But then also kind of shows, you know, how stupid one side can be over the other. And I think Barinholtz, who has increasingly been funnier and funnier, I think, in many movies, you know, he practically stole Blockers earlier this year. I think he's got a great handle on this material. I mean, it sometimes you kind of want it to go further. It has kind of a structure to it that, since it goes kind of day by day, you're not exactly sure where this thing is actually headed. I saw the movie without having seen a single frame from a trailer or anything, so I wasn't quite sure where it was going. And it does kind of find that comedic, you know, block where it kind of wraps itself up maybe a little too neatly. But I think it ends on a really positive note, even though this film does take some extremely dark turns, and, you know, it kind of gets you to the point where you just kind of wonder about yourself, just, you know, how far, you know, how much can you take before you are going to snap about everything that's going on in this country. I think this movie takes you up to a point you kind of go, yeah, that would probably make me do it too. So it's kind of like, you know, watching a comedic version of The Purge in a way. And considering that those movies are garbage and Ike Barinholtz can be pretty funny, I had a really great time with this movie.
Okay. All right. That's The Oath. And that's playing right now. And so is he a decent director?
He's fine. I mean, I don't think he does anything, too fancy or anything. I think he's, you know, it's more about the script and the performances. Nora Dern plays his mother. So he's just, I mean, he's having a great time with the cast. Tiffany Haddish, I think, is perfectly balanced in this movie. I'm not a fan of hers, but I think that, you know, he knows how to direct her. I'll say that much, and he gets a really balanced performance out of her. And I think John Cho is hilarious in this movie, absolutely hilarious. And Billy Magnuson, very scary in this movie.
All right, okay, that's The Oath, and it's out right now. And Eric liked it. Okay, Colin, why don't you tell us about Halloween?
All right, well, this is not a remake or a reimagining, but rather a direct sequel to the original, as if those other ones never happened. So maybe it's a reimagining of H2O from 1998, which also had Jamie Lee Curtis reprising a role as Laurie Strode. But nope, we're starting over yet again, and now she's 40 years removed from the night Michael Myers attacked her, and has spent the last, 30 or so years prepping her family and her grandkids and the eventual eventuality that Michael Myers will show up again. And at the start of the film, he is in an institution, and he gets paid a visit by a couple of journalists who are reinvestigating the murders that Myers, committed 40 years ago. And he eventually escapes this place and makes his way back to Haddonfield, Illinois, where the original took place and where Laurie Strode's family lives. There's her granddaughter who goes to high school and all of her friends, so the series or genre doesn't lose that teenager vibe that is so important. And, it's all just kind of building up to Halloween night and, the return of Michael Myers, the style mayhem. Except that mayhem is kind of by the numbers in this one. In fact, very by the numbers. This is directed by David Gordon Green, who at one time was a favorite director of mine. Has since walked that back over the last 10 years, although he's had some very good films since then, some very not good films. And this, unfortunately, belongs in the very not good film. You know, the problem with this, I mean, it's got many problems, but this is from a screenplay that Green co-wrote with Danny McBride, of all people. And the last time they collaborated on something was Your Highness, which was also made for Universal Pictures, and I'm kind of surprised they let him back in the door after that. And so this has been kind of one of those really frustrating Hollywood collaborations of the last 10 years, because David Gordon Green is an immensely talented director and Danny McBride is an immensely not talented writer. And you can see that in this because, one of the basic things, one of the basic problems of this movie is a screenplay. And I never really bought that Jamie Lee Curtis was going on 40 years without any incidents of Michael Myers and still obsessing over it. It doesn't track. She's had a couple divorces, they say. She's got, a couple kids. Her life has changed dramatically in the course of these 40 years, and yet we're still expected to believe that she's completely obsessed with, the whole Michael Myers thing. In fact, there's even a character in the movie who early on says, 40 years, a lot has happened, and this is not that big of a deal. And it's kind of hard to disagree with him at times in this case. And another thing, I mean, David Gordon Green has a very distinct directorial style, if you know his films. And he tries to bring that style in certain scenes in this movie that you can tell he wrote. And it's a great style. It's one of the things I love about his work. It's so unexpected and quirky and really cool, but it doesn't belong in horror. I mean, that's the thing. It just doesn't belong in this genre. The type of dialogue he writes, the type of performances he likes to get from people, the improvisational nature of his style, it just doesn't work here. And, you know, there's a lot of things that don't work here. It's never really very scary. It's very by the numbers. So he doesn't really bring much in the way of new horror to it. There's a nice tracking shot that he does that I really liked. And so on a technical level, there are moments that I appreciate about the film, but really this is a whatever you call it that just does not work, and really, again, pains me to say that about this director, but yeah, this was another failure for him.
Yeah, I'm wondering what he would have done with Suspiria now that we've got the other remake that's coming out. Eric, Colin, hang on, guys, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, when we come back, we'll get Eric's take on Halloween, and I will tell you what I thought of it as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back with more on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a jokey time. That's all coming up, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Okay, we are talking movies, as we do every Monday morning, and before the break, Colin told us about Halloween, the new Halloween, and he didn't like it. And let's get the other guys back here. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello there.
All right. Now, Eric, you reviewed this. Where'd you see it? You saw it at...
Saw it at Toronto, where it had a midnight premiere, and I was there for it. And I think I texted you immediately after walking out of the movie.
Yes, you did.
And I think I just texted you one word, and that word was boo.
Right.
Obviously, I wasn't trying to scare you, although yeah. It was probably a more effective scare tactic than anything happens in this movie. You know... 40 years aside, Halloween is still a masterpiece. Whether or not it scares a new generation, that's their, burden to bear. Briefly summarize, some of the things that I said at the film festival. I don't think David Gordon Green and Dan McBride understand what makes Halloween work. And if they do, then they studied the Rob Zombie version more than they did the John Carpenter version, because frankly, they didn't make a Halloween movie, they made a Friday the 13th movie, right down to the dumb numbskull fodder for blood that is going to be throughout the movie. And even mentioning the word blood shows you that they have a fundamental misunderstanding of what makes that film work. Now, again, maybe for a new generation you need to bring the gore, as they say, but you don't need to bring it to a sense that you have Jason Voorhees running around and not Michael Myers. Michael Myers does not crush heads with his foot, and that happens in this movie. And that's at the tail end of a moment of a scene where I pretty much checked out for good on this movie. And it was basically just sitting there for the rest of the movie waiting for the climax to happen, because, okay, so we've been waiting 40 years, so to speak, if you throw out all the other sequels, for this moment, and they even fail to deliver on that. The climax of this movie is utterly unspectacular. I'm no fan of Halloween H2O, but at least that, that the climax of the movie felt like something. It's, it felt like they were trying to, give, some serious closure to it. I'm glad Colin brought up the idea of, the Laurie Strode character and 40 years of misery that she's gone through, because I think that this movie also misses a seriously genuine opportunity to use that storyline as a commentary on the Me Too movement. This movie was put into production at some point after all this stuff happened, and to have a woman who has been carrying around 40 years of trauma, and like Colin said, it doesn't really track in this movie. It doesn't really feel that way. It feels like a necessity more than, you know, something that actually feels, you know, in her soul, a part of her character. You know, it feels like a gimmick, really. You know, it feels like just, you know, let's just make her Sarah Connor. Okay, let's make her a survivalist, and none of that really works. Like I said, the climax, even if it's just going to be an action climax, is utterly unspectacular. And you know, she seems pretty calm. You know, she has guns, and she seems pretty calm. You know, she might be crazy to her family, but other than that, Colin's absolutely right. That whole subplot does not track. You know, this is a real failure on their part, and it's disturbing that I don't know why this movie has garnered, you know, some of the passes that it is getting, because it's a pretty terrible film, and I was really disappointed when I said boo. I texted you boo, Nick. I meant every letter of it.
Yeah.
And I will continue to say that very loudly to people who tell me that this is a good movie, because it's not.
No, it isn't. And you know, I mean, you guys obviously know what the movie Halloween means to me, and how important and a life-changing movie it was for me, and still holds up. I mean, it's, you know, it's still one of the greatest horror movies ever made. And the greatness of that movie is its simplicity. That's one of the reasons why it works so well. It's just a real simple setup, and the Michael Myers character is just evil. It's a personification of evil. Any kind of backstory that they've tried to bring to it in any of the sequels just doesn't work at all. I really was hoping this was going to be good. And when I first heard about it, I didn't think it was a great idea. And then when I saw the first trailer, because the first trailer was great. And then I got excited about it, and I heard, you know, like positive buzz about it. But this is terrible. This is, you know, this is a bad Halloween movie, a really bad Halloween movie. I happen to be a really big fan of H2O. I think H2O is a pretty terrific movie, and I think Jamie Lee Curtis is great in H2O. And you know, the suffering of 20 years makes more sense than 40. And so, you know what I mean? And it just seems mm-hmm. like 20 years, I can understand that. And you know, she had an alcohol problem, and it seemed that's – and there was a lot of weight to it. I think she's really, really good in H2O, you know, and there's that moment in H2O, which I really I adore, and I got the chills when it happened, when they came face-to-face through that – you know, you guys know the iconic moment – when they mm-hmm. come face to face through the door, and you see him, you know, they look at each other through the door. That moment, that's a big moment, you know. And they pull it off in that movie. Steve Miner, speaking of Friday the 13th, directed that movie, and I think he had much more of an understanding of what Halloween means and what the characters mean than David Gordon Green and Danny McBride did, you know. So I kept like thinking, you know, how gratifying H2O was. Like, I thought the conflict was great. I thought the ending was really, really strong. And I thought that was it. I thought we would never have to have to sit through another Halloween movie again, because I thought the character found closure. You know, Laurie Strode found some closure, and then boom. Now we got this 20 years from that moment. Even though, you know, how H2O in this timeline doesn't exist. Which I always thought, which I also think is weird. So, you know, because otherwise, I mean, now, you know, if the other ones existed, Laurie Strode's dead because she got killed in Resurrection. So, yeah. So now in this case, we've got 20 more years adding on to the problems that Jamie Lee character is going through, and they give her nothing. The script gives her nothing. She's got unmemorable dialogue. All they did was give her a safe house and a bunch of guns and security, and that's it. And she yells about security and it makes it embarrassing for her family. That's all they've done here. There's no, I mean, like, the whole climax at the end, there's no emotional payoff whatsoever. You don't really care about Laurie Strode and her family. The whole subplot with the teenagers was ridiculous. And a lot of those scenes with the teenagers I found incredibly annoying. And yeah, it's really way too violent. And it just doesn't work. It's not scary. There's no suspense whatsoever. And it's a massive, massive, massive disappointment, especially coming from, you know, the fact that Carpenter is executive producer on this one. But Carpenter, you know, they had an interview with Carpenter. Carpenter's like, hey, as long as they pay me. That's all. Carpenter's being very, he's been very honest about that kind of stuff. As long as the check clears. But I will
yeah,
say
and I
this,
hope Blumhouse has given him a little bonus taste after this weekend.
Yeah, I hope so too, man. And here's the mm-hmm. other thing. Let me say this. The only good thing about this movie is the score. He and his son put together a great score. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the classic Halloween theme, but this is a really great score. And of course, I mean, obviously Carpenter is a fantastic composer. But the score is the only good thing in this movie. Everything else, I mean, it's a really bad movie. A really, really bad movie that I was massively disappointed by. So, yeah, and as a big-time Halloween fan, no. No. It's really bad. Really, really bad and massively disappointing. So none of us liked it. I don't know. Well, a lot of people saw it, made a lot of money over the weekend, but we knew that was going to happen. It was perfect timing
for it, too,
you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody expected those kind of numbers. So, all right, guys, hang on, all right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric Childress, Colin Suter are here. We got one more movie to talk about. I wanted to save, I didn't want to close on Halloween. You know, we could have closed on Halloween. It was the biggest movie of the week, but I would rather close on a high note. So that's what we're going to do when we come back. We'll take a break here on 720 WGN. More movie reviews. After this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. on your weekday mornings. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are talking with Eric and Colin, and let's get the guys back on. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
We should let everybody know, Colin, that this is your last week for a little while. You're going to be taking a little. Next week is your last week.
Next week.
Okay, and then you're taking a little time off. And Eric won't be on next week.
Right.
Where are you going, Eric? Are you going to Vegas?
I'm going to Vegas for the weekend.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, is Jim gonna? Are we gonna contact Jim Liskowski maybe? Okay. All right. So we'll get maybe Jim to fill in for Eric while he's off, and then it'll be Colin's last week for a little while until the beginning of the you're going to come in and do the year end.
I'll do mid December stuff.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. All right. Month and a half.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Well, we'll miss you, Colin, while you're off.
Oh, I'll miss you too.
Yeah. All right. let's see. Eric, why don't you tell us about Beautiful Boy?
Okay, well, this is based on a true story, based on a pair of books, actually, and it stars Steve Carell and Timothy Chalamet. Steve Carell plays a journalist who, as the film opens, will go sort of flash forward and flashback through the story that he's going to tell. He really wants to know what is going on with his son, who has turned into a serious drug addict. Not just the minor stuff, some serious stuff as well. The movie takes us back and forth through their relationship. They were as father and son. They had a very close, tight-knit relationship, even through divorce that he had. And this movie takes us through the idea of what can a father do for a son that is so deep into his own addiction, and again, not the serious stuff that not easy to get off of. What are the opportunities for rehab and the real emotional connection between a father and son, and what this movie I think does so well. We've seen so many movies about addiction, whether it be alcohol, drugs, and various other things, where people need to get clean in some manner. We've seen those kind of 12-step type movies before. This one, takes a more difficult path. It's one where you don't exactly see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I think what this movie does really succinctly is really kind of elevate the idea of the non-addicted person's pain. This movie is mostly told from the father's perspective, though we do get a number of individual scenes with the son and, exactly where his addiction takes him on his journey. But mostly, this is told through the eyes of Steve Carell's character. And, we see a father desperately in pain. Carell, recently has been making, quite a side career in these dramatic roles that he's taking of characters who very hard for him to fully express his emotions because he isn't quite in touch with, how he's going to manifest them. And, knowing that his son is going down a path where he is probably going to die and there's nothing he can do for him. He is not a little boy anymore. And, we've seen movies like that before, but I think this movie, in many terms kind of feels like, that anvil that kind of just presses down on your chest. And like, what can he do? What can I do if someone in my life, ends up going down this road? So I think that, this movie, well, maybe not on an artistic level the way that Requiem for a Dream was, but it has that same sort of visceral impact on your emotions, I think. I think that this movie is in some sort of getting a little too easily dismissed for I don't know cliches or something like that. I don't buy into that because I really felt this journey that Carell's character was taking and wanting to understand and whatever he can possibly do when his son goes missing from time to time up to the very painful moment late in the film where he realizes that there might be nothing more he can do for him. And you're kind of waiting for that moment to happen. And when it does, it really is no less devastating. I think this is a really good film about addiction. And I think Carell and particularly Chalamet are both really fantastic in it. I was quite a fan of this movie, much more than I was expecting it to be. And I think it's one of the better movies about the other side of addiction, the addiction to wanting to be the savior, if you will, and possibly failing as a result of it. So I like this movie a lot.
Okay. All right, Colin, what'd you think?
Yeah, I did too, and I think Steve Carell's performance and I mean his side of the story is the most compelling. Just kind of the his arc of having to go from this great loving father who isn't shy about, well, a little shy at first, but will eventually will probably smoke a joint with his son at some point in his life, as depicted in one scene in the film, and to go from just that kind of guy who thinks he's super dad, has gone through life thinking he's this great father, and realizing that there's only so much he could do. And I think that journey is really interesting and thought provoking. And I think this is definitely one of Carell's best dramatic performances. And I mean, really, Chalamet just is asked to do a whole lot here. A lot of this could have been a very showy performance, but I didn't think there was a false note in anything he did in this film. His scenes with Carell, where he's basically asking for help in a very seemingly innocent way, but it's the drugs and the manipulation talking. I mean, he really pulls that stuff off, I think, really beautifully. This was directed by a guy named Felix van Groningen, probably butchering that last name, but now, he made a movie a few years ago called The Broken Circle Breakdown, which I also really liked. And it got kind of buried in the award season of the year it came out. But I think this guy knows how to tap into emotions and then tap into these, these kinds of performances and these kind of delicate situations. And also knows how to use music really well. I think it's a really good soundtrack to this movie. But ultimately, this is a heartbreaker, and I think anchored by two very strong performances.
Okay. All right, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you what I thought of Beautiful Boy. And then Eric will stick around, and we will talk about the box office returns right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're reviewing the new movies. Right before the break, Eric and Colin both gave positive reviews to Steve Carell and Timothée Chalamet's new film, Beautiful Boy. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
I echo everything you guys said about this movie. It destroyed me. It really, really destroyed me. And I think it is, you know, there have been, Eric, you've already mentioned this, there's been, you know, so many movies about, you know, addiction and recovery. That it seems to be a subgenre unto itself, and some of them are great, and some of them aren't. This is a great one, you know, Carell is fantastic. This Timothée Chalamet, man, he's the real deal, man. I mean, this kid is phenomenal. You know, and at such a young age to be able to you know really tap into these emotions and play it really subtle. He's a terrific actor. He's just a terrific actor. And Carell has become a really great dramatic actor. You know, and it's just a joy to watch that guy. And then, when you put somebody like Maura Tierney and Amy Ryan in the movie, that's a cast right there of major pros. But this movie gets the addiction part without a false note, and again, telling it from the point of view of like this guy who just feels completely helpless. There are scenes that are just heartbreaking between the two of them, where he's desperately trying to understand what's going on with his son, and he's desperately sad and really wants to help him and feels completely helpless, and that, you know, that comes off the screen massively and beautifully in the movie. This is a very emotional film. You're going to be very affected by it, and I was deeply moved by it, and it destroyed me. Timothée Chalamet has been doing, you know, the talk show circuit, obviously, to plug the movie, and the guy that he plays is actually okay. He's he's okay now. He recovered, so it's got a happy ending in terms of real life. But not everybody does okay. You know what I mean? Not everybody can survive that. And that's what's harrowing about watching this and watching this relationship between these two. I mean, some of the flashback stuff is beautiful. And then, I don't know, I just think Carell is really turned into a great dramatic actor. I mean, you take this. I thought Last Flag Flying last year, I thought he was great in that. Foxcatcher, obviously, got an Oscar nomination for that. He's become quite, I mean, you think of Steve Carell as wacky Second City guy and, Michael on The Office, but he really he's got great chops. He's turned into a really, really terrific dramatic actor who can stand his ground with, you know, like other great dramatic actors and actresses. And I just think this is a beautiful movie, but it is heartbreaking. I got to say.
Yeah, and we have another Steve Carell movie coming out this year.
It's Zemeckis' new movie.
That's right.
Oh my God, I can't wait to see it.
It's always great to see Amy Ryan on screen. She's not being utilized enough, but when she shows up in the movie, it does kind of feel like the darkest timeline of The Office.
You know what? I didn't even think of that. Oh my God! Why? How did I not even think of that? Wow!
This is what happened to Michael Scott and Holly Flock.
I didn't even think of that. Wow. Okay. All right. So, highly recommended. Highly recommended, Beautiful Boy. So, it's only playing in a few theaters, but it's worth seeking out. So, definitely. All right. What do we got next week?
What do we have next week?
Oh, we have a Gerard Butler submarine movie.
That's right.
Which I'm schizophrenic about because how I feel about submarine movies, and you know how I feel about Gerard Butler. So, it's a little mixed.
Yeah, you're going to be your emotions are going to be in flux next week.
We have another Johnny.
Can You Ever Forgive Me with Melissa McCarthy and Richard E. Grant?
That comes out, and Johnny. There's another Johnny English movie.
Johnny English Strikes Again. Mid '90s. Jonah Hill's
directorial debut. Yep.
And What They Had with Hilary Swank and Michael Shannon, set in Chicago.
There you go. All right, so that's all coming out next week. Eric, you'll be off next week.
Yes.
And have a good time in Vegas.
Thank you.
As you always do.
I try to.
Yeah, I know. And so there you go. And Eric, you hang on. We're going to talk about box office here. Colin, thanks, man. We will talk to you next week.
All righty.
There
bye-bye.
You go. Colin Suter, everybody. Eric, let's talk box office here.
Yeah.
To no one's surprise, Halloween dominated. I think everybody knew that. I think you even predicted $70 million or something like that, right?
I thought it was going to do at least in the 60s. I think that's what they were projecting. Over the course of the weekend, the projection started off in the high 70s, between 75 and 80. By sometime on Saturday, they were actually expecting it to best Venom's week, October record from a few weeks ago of over $80 million. It eventually settled down to 77.5. It's like Blumhouse's most expensive production, and it still only cost $15 million.
Yeah.
This thing is obviously a massive hit, and the only question now, I think next week, it's going to be an easy number one again next week, the weekend right before Halloween.
Sure.
So it's going to be, it will drop, but I think that, that cushion will, not make it drop so hard. So it'll be an easy number one. And now it's just a matter of, is it going to hit 200 million? And whether it's not going to beat, Get Out, which is Blumhouse's highest, grossing domestic film to date.
Mm.
So
we'll see what happens.
Both of which are possible.
It was packed when I saw it, and it was packed. I'm trying to figure out. I can't figure out whether the audience liked it or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't. I know that much.
Yeah.
So number two, A Star Is Born, $19.3 million, $126.3 million total, big hit.
Yeah, massive, massive hit. Right now, kind of charting a course for somewhere around 180 million. 200 million still not out of the question, but 180 seems is what the numbers are suggesting right now. You can't scoff at that.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it continues to be the front runner for Best Picture right now. I think it's just the way it's going to play out. People are still flocking to it.
Yeah. Now, and the buzz is so good on it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know anybody who didn't like it.
It's the movie. Seriously, everywhere I go, everyone who knows who I am and what I do, it's the one movie they ask me about.
Yeah. Yeah.
The second movie they asked me about is Bohemian Rhapsody, which I said I haven't seen yet.
Number three, Venom, $18.1 million. It's up to $171 million. Solid hit.
Solid hit, yeah. And the only question I have is, who are still going to see this movie?
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't know. I mean, the drops are 50%. Week to week, which is not bad for a movie that most people think is garbage. So I don't know. Are comic book movies that strong that they can just, they can just survive being garbage?
Yeah.
And this one apparently can.
Yeah. Goosebumps 2 comes in next, the haunted Halloween. That's $9.7 million.
Yeah. The okay drop, nothing really spectacular one way or the other.
Yeah. Number five, and I can't tell you how disappointed I am by this, is First Man. $8.5 million. It's only made $29.9 million total. And I just...
Yeah.
That's just very
upset.
Yeah,
and its own studio did it no favors this weekend by opening that movie a week before Halloween. Yeah, two different audiences, but First Man lost a lot of IMAX screens this week to Halloween.
See, that's just wrong.
It's just stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just stupid. I mean, if you want to continue to build buzz for First Man, you keep it in the IMAX screens. People
right.
don't need to see Halloween in IMAX. They'll be perfectly not scared in regular theaters.
Right, right.
The critics are going to keep this movie alive. Everyone's on board with this movie. Whether or not something like this is going to affect its Oscar chances, I'm not buying into that just yet. But it's only made $55 million worldwide so far. And it's probably, that 50 to $55 million is probably where it's headed right now in the U.S., which
that's
is really disappointing.
That's a real shame, man. It really is. That is a real shame. Yeah, I don't know. By the way, I just want to mention that we have a space expert who's a regular on our show. He's an author. He's written a bunch of books about space. He works with NASA. His name is Rod Pyle, and he loved it. Like, from that point of view, he's like, yeah, this is right on. And he just thought it was great. He was not happy about Buzz Aldrin, though, the way they portrayed Buzz Aldrin in the movie.
Does he know Buzz personally?
He did, yeah. I mean, he's known him, yeah. He met him, and he's like... But I mean, he does come off as a bit of a jerk in the movie.
Well, he comes off as a guy that just says whatever's on his
mind.
Well,
and you know, according to Rod,
no filter.
And according to Rod, that's how he is in real life.
Well, yeah. Well, so it's an accurate portrayal. And yeah. I guess it's just a matter of if you know he's joking or not.
Right. That's the thing. Right. Number six, The Hate U Give, 7.5 million, bringing its total up to 10.6.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, Smallfoot, 6.6. Night School is still hanging in there. Bad Times at the El Royale, another failure.
That's a big failure.
13 million in 2 weeks, and it's such a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then finally...
I don't know what else to say about that. I mean, it was doomed. You know, that number it put up last week, it was doomed.
Yep.
I mean, it wasn't for lack of advertising. They had it out there. I just don't think that people... People didn't know what to make of it.
I agree. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And then finally, The Old Man and the Gun, $2 million, $4.2 million. But that's in limited, right?
Yeah, it expanded finally wider this week, so it's in like 800 theaters. So it did manage to crack the top 10 finally. And I think it's going to continue to expand for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Fox Searchlight still advertising it. I still see commercials for it, all over the place. It's expanded. The numbers aren't great for it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, now maybe it's in the top 10. It'll get people talking about it a little bit further and, people will go see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another movie that's aimed squarely at adults.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that one does. Okay. All right, Eric. Well, listen, have a great time in Vegas next week.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you when you get back.
Sounds great.
All right, Eric Childress, everybody. Thanks, buddy. And he'll be back in a couple of weeks. He'll be taking next week off. And then he'll come back in 2 weeks and we'll review more new movies and talk more box office with him. So that's there's the deal. All right, let's take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And we're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. And the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive to get your work week going. All righty then. So it is Halloween time. And so that means, you know, we have our friends Fartula and... Count Fartula and Fartenstein, they're out and they're hanging with us. And, of course, we always bring out the annual, we bring out the Scary Sound CD. And it's time to track through that again this year. So the story behind this, Dan, as you know,
mm-hmm.
my old partner Gary Lee Wright bought this at like a truck stop, or like an, I believe it was like at an Oasis. And it was right by the register, and it was like $4.99 or something, and maybe it could have been even cheaper than that. And he's like, "Well, Scary Sounds." Bought it. We brought it back, and it had no track listing in it. It just says Scary Sounds, 74 minutes of scary sound effects, 70 haunting sounds, 16 spooky orchestrations. It is from the Paper Magic Group. Which we've kind of tracked that down too over the years, and I guess like people can still was this available like on eBay or
yes on eBay
it's still available on eBay.
I will check if it's available now. It has been in the past.
Okay, and so we had no idea because there was no track listing. We had no idea what the scary sounds were, and so we played the tracks. And still couldn't figure out what the hell they were. So that's what we like to do. We like to bust this thing out. I mean, as we've said before in the past, this thing was probably recorded in some dude's basement with like two of his friends. And some of the sound effects just don't make any sense. We can't figure them out. but it is from CNV Entertainment. The Paper Magic Group presents Scary Sounds.
And it's currently available on Amazon.
It is. What are they charging for?
$6.75.
$6.75? Wow, it's gone up in price. You know why? Because of all the demand.
That's right.
So it's 70 scary sound effects, 16 spooky musical orchestrations, and it's 75 minutes long. Creaks, shrieks, growls, howls, cats, bats, moans, groans, shackles, cackles, bubbles, troubles, breathing, seething, cracking, hacking, wiggling, giggling, drips, rips, bumps, thumps, breaks, shakes, and much, much more. You can't get much, much more than that. So now the cut on the Scary Sounds CD that has gotten the most attention from us and from the listeners is just a guy screaming. It is the track is entitled Screams, and then parentheses man, because the track after it is Screams parentheses woman. And for some reason, the Screams parentheses woman is only 25 seconds long, but the Screams parentheses man is a minute 59, so it's 2 minutes long. Now, I've played this in the past. We've played it before. The first time we played it, the phones lit up, and people were like, "What are you doing? What is this?" It has never failed to make cats and pets go a little bit crazy while we play it. And it just goes on forever. It just goes on forever. So it's an annual tradition. So you might want to get the cats away from the radio right now. And so this is the very terrifying. And again, as you will hear, it changes course about halfway through, and you'll hear what happens. But anyway, here it is. This is our first annual play of the Scary Sound CD, and this is, of course, the best track on there. And this is Screams Man from the Scary Sound CD.
Ah! Ah!
I don't understand how this is scary.
Ah!
Right.
Oh.
Oh.
Ah!
A little high pitch there.
Ah! Ah! Ah!
Right.
I
understand. Yes.
Ah!
Oh! There's now, he's just joined by a bunch of guys. And then they just leave him. Like 30 guys walk into the room, start screaming, and then they just leave him. By the way, this goes on for another 35 seconds. I just... Yeah. Oh, oh. Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Right. And that's it. There you go. So the first time we played that, when Gary and I played this, back like, and I think he got this like back in 1999, he got this, we were beside ourselves. I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And I can't imagine like playing this CD, because, you know, a lot of people play the scary, you know, like sort of scary sounds CDs.
Sure.
on their front porch. They'll have like a couple of speakers outside on the porch so that when the kids come up to get their trick or treat, when they go up to get the candy, there's some scary little sounds. I can't imagine this thing being played anywhere. So we went through the track listings and we tried to write down what we thought the sounds were. So let me just go through some of these, because we love going through these. We go through these every year, and it's ridiculous. And so here's the first cut on the album. All right, let's see if you can figure out what this is. We've often taken, you know, some guesses as to what this is, but this is from the Scary Sound CD, and here's the first one. Right. So I believe we wrote bacon. I think that's what we wrote, what Gary and I wrote. I lost the track listing that we wrote. I don't know what the hell I did with it, but it's gone. So I thought, well, we're thinking bacon. But that's not, you know, very scary. Like, in fact, the sound of bacon sizzling is not scary. It's awesome. Just, you know, you wish the smell were there. No, but that's an animal. That's an acid bath. That's what that is. That's so obvious. Now, Dan, you got this track listing, right? You were able to track it down.
Yes, sir. One of our listeners was.
Yeah, and it was on. So now we know. After all these years, we finally got. You know, it was a few years where we didn't have a track listing,
right?
And finally, we got the track listing from it.
You know, that last cut sounded a little bit like the white noise app I have, which is appropriate because it probably put many people to sleep. This CD,
right? It does. Yeah, no, it does. I can see that. Yeah. Okay, so this is animal sounds. Right. Mm-hmm. Where are they? Where is this?
This sounds like the jungle on my white sound app, you know, that I have.
Maybe the same people made this.
I mean, they might have just, the first couple tracks might have just been what they were doing for the sound effect, the white sound app, and just didn't, you know, remember to cut it out.
All right. How about this? Yeah, this is scary, too. Isn't this terrifying? I hope everybody at home has their lights on, because you're probably freaking out right now over how unbelievably scary this is. So this is bats. That's what this is. This is bats. So
it reminded me of the story you tell when about your paper packing days and having to roll the wagon down the street.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was delivering papers. By the way, we also have a story here about people who had paper routes, like very famous people who actually had paper routes. Where'd you find that, Dan?
Melt the floss.
All right, here's some scary bees. So there you go. There's some terrifying bees, everybody. All right, let's see what's up here now. All right, let's try this one. See what this is. See if you can guess what this is. Mm-hmm. This is terrifying. Yep. What did that sound like, Dan?
Twigs snapping?
It's bones breaking. That's bones breaking.
Actually, you caused quite a bit of row with that sound effect in my personal life. I don't know if you remember, but the first time we were working together when you debuted this CD, you asked me what that was, and I said it was spaghetti being broken to be put in a pot.
That's right.
your Italian nature leapt out of you, screamed at me at the radio.
Yeah.
My father-in-law happened to be listening that morning and then called my wife to let her know that she should be cooking the pasta, not me, because I didn't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I was just like, what? You don't break pasta when you cook it. You don't break the spaghetti when you cook it. All right, how about this? Okay, first of all, this is labeled as just breathing, but the whole see, he's breathing now, but he was going before. So, again, in some dude's basement, there's no question about it, in some dude's basement on a Panasonic tape recorder. All right. Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, more scary sounds. And again, you can get this on Amazon from the Paper Magic Group. Scary sounds, man. It's always a highlight of the holiday season, of holiday season being Halloween. So, all right, let's take a break. When we come back, more here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We're going to talk about the Sears catalog, if you guys have memories about that. We are currently going through the Fantastic Scary Sound CD that my old partner Gary Lee Wright bought back in 1999. And we busted out every Halloween season. And, of course, we have the Screaming Man dude. So, let's see. So all that's coming up. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We got some texts coming in. 608 area code says, Screaming Man sounds a bit like what I picture the late, great Larry from Aurora in his wrestling days. Oh, Larry from Aurora. He was a lovely man and a character. What a character that guy was. Big fan of the show. He'd call in all the time. Hey, big guy. He used to be a wrestler. He was a very interesting, fascinating guy who led quite a life. Michelle in Geneva says, was that Johnny Orifice screaming? Maybe a bad meal at Taco Bell, or maybe my ex when I call. There you go. Johnny Orifice. He's never going to lose that one. I'll let that one go, Michelle. 301 area code says, the scariest thing about this CD is how much Amazon is charging for it. Oh, boy. All right, let's see if we can identify this scary sound. So you know what this is, Dean?
I do not.
It's eating glass.
Oh.
It's very specific. All right, how about this one?
Yet no screaming.
No, just this is a guy who enjoys eating glass. I guess it's painless for this person to eat glass. All right, how about this one? No, that's it. That's it. You know what that was?
What's that?
That was eye popping. Okay. I think we can all know this one. This is so ridiculous. That would be falling down a well.
So, how does he make that? Does he get in a big room, you think, and run away? Or it's a small room and he keeps leaning back?
Yeah, again, up from the mic. All right, how about this one? So that was essentially they used the same sound effect. That was the same sound effect, except they added those other ones because that's falling into chemicals. That's what that one is.
Not acid bath. Not a callback.
No.
Different.
This is chemicals. Could be acid, but it's chemicals. All right, how about this? That was finger cutting. I guess chopping off fingers? Is that what that was?
Must have been the same guy as the eating glass because...
Yeah, no pain.
No pain.
Nothing, no screaming. All right. A few more of these ridiculous sound effects. We'll talk about that and then we'll move on to some other stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And the news is coming up next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And there you go. And we got much more coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text if you would like to join us. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. So, I may be getting a little bit loopy because I did not sleep. I spent the entire evening with Dana DiLorenzo, my future ex-wife. So I might be getting a little loopy. I'm starting to feel a little tired now.
It's a special treat for the Monday audience. Usually it's a Friday thing.
It's usually
or like a Wednesday thing because of the movie night.
Yeah. But, hanging out with Dana is lovely, but it is also exhausting. it's fantastic and I love her and everything, but yeah, there's a lot going on. All right. 312-981-7200 again. If you would like to get the Scary Sounds CD, 74 minutes of scary sound effects, 70 haunting sounds and 16 spooky orchestrations. You can get it at Amazon. And we've been getting a lot of mileage out of this since 1999 when we first got it. And, it's possibly the worst sound effects CD of all time. And we love playing it. So let's see. Dan, see if you can, let's see what we got here. That was, so it seems like the same guy. The same guy who screamed, the same guy who fell down the well and fell into the chemicals. That was Groaning Man.
Mm. That actually sounds like it could be Dan.
What?
Play it again. It sounds like it could be Dan.
It sounds like...
In the studio yesterday recorded that. Honestly, I thought it was Dan when you said Dan, and then he played it. I actually thought for a second that was Dan.
All right, let's listen with that in mind here.
That's totally Dan.
What?
That's him getting up to go to work.
Changing my daughter's diaper.
Is that what...
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you sound? Is that what you sound like, Dan?
It's a rough patch for us in that department. And it's funny because Aubrey came in here when Screaming Man was on, and he said, it sounds like the guy who recorded Constipation Blues. So maybe there's a theme going on.
Yeah, a little more fiber in your diet wouldn't hurt. Lake Geneva Man says Screaming Man sounded like he was giving birth. 773 area code says Screaming Man sounded like everybody after yesterday's Bears game. Carrie said, I was listening the night you played this for the first time with Gary Lee. I was in my garage fixing a snowblower that I was given. I didn't know how to fix a snowblower then, so it got me through the night. I bet he was screaming too. Carrie trying to fix a snowblower. He's in there screaming. Okay. Let's see what's next on this fantastic. Oh, how about this one? Yeah. Any idea? You can guess at what this is? This sounds like it's in the same sort of jungle or whatever it was the animal sounds were.
Pigeons.
Pigeons. The terrifying sound of pigeons.
Yeah.
No, those are gremlins, according to this. Those are gremlins. All right, how about this? You know what that was? Any idea?
Guillotine.
That's right. Very good. Very good, Vic. All right, how about this? Yeah.
The gnashing of bones.
This goes on for another 45 seconds. No, this is a... This is guts being mangled. That's how they've titled this. Guts being mangled. That's what this is. Yeah, another 25 seconds of that, so we're going to move on. How about this one? This goes on for another 40 seconds. It's the Hounds of Hell. That's what this is. This is the Hounds of Hell. Right. Okay, that goes on for another 25 seconds. So, Hounds of Hell. All right, what about this one? Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Okay. How about this one?
Ah! 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 Ah!
Ah! Ah! All right. Ah! So they just recycled this guy screaming on like 12 different cuts on this thing. This is Man Eaten by Dog. That's it. Man Eaten by Dog.
It seems like the dog was mangling the screaming man's guts.
Yeah. But they just recycled like four different of the sound effects that they already recorded. They slap them together and go, all right, this is man eating dog. Or no, dog, man eaten by dog. All right, how about this one? This one.
Hounds of Hell breaking coffee cups.
This is entitled Monster Breaks Window. I mean, come on, man. Monster breaks window, and is he going, oops, I didn't mean to break that window. All right. Let's try this one. Here we go. You know what that was? That was Poltergeist. Don't you remember those sound effects from the movie?
Of course.
It was, they're here. That's right. That's ridiculous. It was ridiculous. Okay. All right, how about this one? This one's fun. Right. All right. That goes on for another 25 seconds. That was Playful Ghosts.
That's creepy.
They were playful. They were little playful ghosts. All right, how about this one? Here. That's a terrified crowd. That's what that was. That was terrified crowd. All right. So we heard Screaming Man. And we're going to close out with that, too, when we finish this up. But here's Screaming Woman. Jeez. So that's, you know, a reasonable length, right? It's only 25 seconds.
Yeah.
Once again, this is 2 minutes.
Ah! Ah! Ah!
And she didn't get visited by a bunch of other people either.
No. How about a lonesome?
Ah!
Right. Terrifying, isn't it?
Ah!
Scary sounds, man.
Ah!
Trigger Rich mentioned how Groaning Man sounds like Count Fartula, but constipated.
Oh.
Ah!
There's all his friends. They just hang out for a few seconds, then they disappear. Poor guy's all left alone again. That's my favorite part, is when all the guys leave and he's just left alone again. Right.
Sink your teeth into that.
Yeah.
Ah!
Ah! Okay. It goes on another 25 seconds, so I'm just going to stop right there. So there it is. There's some select cuts from the Scary Sounds CD. And we like to bring it out every year. And if you have any comments about it or if you purchased it, I think we actually have had listeners buy this thing. I don't even know why.
I know Peter and Decatur did, for sure.
He did. So you actually, after hearing this nonsense, people did actually buy a copy. Because it's very, you know, you want to have Screaming Man on hand. You never know when you're going to need Screaming Man. Okay. So there's your Scary Sound CD. That was the first time we've played it this season. We'll play it again. We'll play a little bit more from it again. Because there's plenty more. There's plenty. There's over... What is it? 74 minutes. So, yeah. All right. Let's take a break here on 720 WGN. And when we come back, Dan, you mentioned the paper route thing. I think I'm going to jump into that paper route story about the famous people who had paper routes. So, All right. Early morning, stay safe and stay connected with Morgan Kochmeyer, her weather forecasts, and Sarah Gendra's traffic reports. That's weekdays 4 to 6 on WGN-TV Morning News.
We can beat them all.
Service to a green tea.
Hi, this is Tonya Khoury of Green Tea Windows. Increase the beauty and value of your home with our exceptional, energy-efficient, EPA-certified windows. They're made here in the U.S. with a lifetime warranty, and our installers have a minimum 7 years experience. And listen to this. Our windows have the newest technology, self-cleaning glass. Yes, our special glass actually cleans itself. Dirt, dust, and water just rolls right off.
Service to a green tea.
There are so many deals out there for windows, but green tea can beat them all. Yes, green tea can beat any window deal and save you a lot of money. Plus, 0% financing is available. Call us now for details and a free estimate. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green tea services. Service to a
green tea.
800-5-GREEN-TEA.
800-5-GREEN-TEA. Or greenteaservices.com.
That old car is worth money. Visit victoryautowreckers.com for an instant quote. Victory will tow no matter what condition your car's in. Victory buys vehicles every day, including nights and weekends, and you'll get cash on the spot. Go to victoryautowreckers.com for more information or save money by fixing up your car with used parts. Go to victoryautowreckers.com to search their inventory. victoryautowreckers.com.
Victory.
Since 1837, Catholic Cemeteries of the Archdiocese of Chicago has been assisting families with the loss of a loved one. Challenging times such as these or dealing with an impending loss can be very emotional, stressful, and financially challenging. Catholic Cemeteries welcomes the opportunity to support you and provide the help you may need in planning for your final wishes. Go to finalwisheschicago.org and let Catholic Cemeteries help you with your immediate or pre-planning needs. finalwisheschicago.org.
This winter, gather your family around the original social networking device, your fireplace. Get your fireplace ready now. Go with the industry's trusted leader, Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace. Go to cleanfireplace.com.
Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here until 5 a.m. A little bit later on, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we've got the Blackhawks Express, an unfortunate Blackhawks Express that we will play back from last night's game. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Did you ever have a paper route, anybody? 312-981-7200. And yeah, I did, and it was the old school paper route where we had the big giant wooden carts that we would push down the middle of the street with the metal wheels, and I still don't know how everybody in the neighborhood did not wake up as we were pushing this thing down the middle of the street. It was not a particularly pleasant paper route that I had, and it was your neighborhood, Dan.
Really?
Yeah, it was totally in your neighborhood because the newspaper storefront where we would pack up the carts and fold up the newspapers and stuff was in a storefront on Lincoln Avenue, north of school, and south of Irving, and my route was in that whole area, and then when we would finish with our route on the weekends. We'd finish with my route. We would go to the Lincoln for breakfast. So that's
the Lincoln.
Yes, the good old Lincoln. Man, what's in there now? Is there anything there?
No, I think it's for sale / lease. I don't think there's anything.
And the sign is still up there, right?
Correct.
And so the Abraham Lincoln sign is still up there.
Right.
Yeah, that place was legendary, man. We featured a reference to the Lincoln in Black and Blue. We made a joke about not feeling very well after eating at the Lincoln. But yeah, that's where we would meet up. All the newspaper delivery kids, we'd all meet up at the Lincoln afterwards. on a Sunday when we would deliver the Sunday, because the Sunday papers were the biggest pain in the butt to deliver. Now, I know we have a lot of people who deliver newspapers who listen to us. That's been a huge portion of our audience for years and years and years. You know, the people driving the trucks and dropping off the papers and stuff. Because that's right around this time people start doing that. And, the weather was terrible. It was whenever it rained, it was, you have to put a plastic tarp on top of the big metal and wood cart. So,
did you have to double bag it?
Yeah,
no, that
yeah. The raining was not good. When it rained, it was not good. Sundays were always a pain in the neck because we had to stuff the papers. You know, they came, you know, like with the coupons and all that other stuff, and they came separately, and you would have to like actually stuff the papers and then stick them in a plastic bag. It's ridiculous. We did not get paid enough. And we were under 16 anyway. I was like 12 or something when I had that, 12, 13 years old when I had that route. And so they're not going to pay a 12-year-old. They're not going to pay a 12 or 13-year-old kid a decent wage to do that, which is what's not great work. And the dudes who ran the storefront, they would sit in the back and smoke. They would just like be in the back room and all the kids would be out. We would be up front in the storeroom, in the storefront. Doing all the stuff we need to do, getting the papers ready and stuff. And they would just be sitting in the back smoking. There were two older dudes who would just be in the back just smoking. It was the 70s, man. They didn't care. They were just smoking.
Child labor and smoking laws did not exist.
Nope, not at all. Well, here are some famous people who once had paper routes. Walt Disney had a paper route. Walt Disney reminisced of his childhood. When I was 9, my brother Roy and I were already businessmen. In July 1911, their father, Elias, acquired a sizable newspaper delivery route from the Kansas City Star. Although this route officially belonged to Roy, Elias took charge of its operation. Together, Walt, Roy, and Elias Disney were responsible for delivering the Star's afternoon and Sunday editions for over 600 customers. 600 customers! And that was only part of the Disney's trio workload. Every morning, they dole out around 700 copies of the Kansas City Times. Disney kept distributing KC newspapers until he was 15 years old to hit all the houses on his itinerary before school started. The animator-to-be would wake up at 3:30 a.m., usually do work until 6 a.m. Then he'd retrace his steps after class ended. During the winter months, Disney noted, it was always dark and bitter cold in the morning. Many times I had to plow through 3 feet of freshly fallen snow, breaking my own path as I went. Yeah, the snow is another thing. That was always fun. So, let's see. Here's Paul on WGN. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
I'm delivering the journal up here in Waukesha area.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice now because you're in your nice car and with the heat and the power windows. So
yeah.
All you do is pull up to the boxes and throw the papers in.
Yep, yep.
But I've seen some scary things. Like one night at a condo, I've seen a naked man run out to his car, grab something out of his car, and then run back in. I think I can tell what he was grabbing, probably.
Uh-huh. Well, he was just in too much of a hurry to put clothes on when he ran out there?
It was the middle of the night. I think he was grabbing his condoms or something.
Oh, I see. That's a smart to keep keep your condoms in the car. That's the best place to feed. That's the best place to keep them.
I've seen a giant buck, like an 18-point buck, running, crawling up the side of a road through the ditch with both of its back legs broke.
Oh.
And that was kind of creepy.
Oh, man. Yeah, you get to see some weird stuff at 3:30 in the morning, I'll tell you right now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you run over animals all the time.
Yeah. All right, well, Paul, be careful out there, okay?
Yeah, I will.
All right, buddy, take care.
Thanks, bye.
All right, bye. Naked guys running out to their cars to get condoms? What? What's going on there? Wow. All right. Let's take a break. We got the news coming up. We have more very famous people who had paper routes. And if you have any stories about your paper route, or you're on one right now, because many people do deliver the newspapers while they listen to this show, you give us a call or a text, and we'll read them and listen to you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for more more paper route talk. Walt Disney, 600 customers. That's crazy. Man. All right. News is up next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. And, yeah. So, we're talking about famous people who had paper routes. And if you guys had a paper route, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you're, if you have a paper route now, or like our last caller there, Paul, out there, watching naked guys run to their car to get their condoms at 3:30 in the morning. If you would like to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. All right. Who else? Martin Luther King Jr. Growing up, King earned spending money by working as a paperboy for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He landed the gig with some help from his father and frequently used his newspaper funds to purchase books. At the age of 13, the future civil rights hero became the youngest person to assistant manage one of the AJC's delivery stations. 4 years later, King, then a sophomore, wrote a passionate letter to the editor of the same publication condemning the historic mistreatment of African Americans. His father would subsequently write that he had no intimation of King Jr.'s developing greatness until the publication of that letter, which received widespread and favorable comment. How about that? All right. Let's see. Here's Daryl on WGN. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you this morning?
All right.
So I grew up in Northwest Illinois in a farming community, and in the 50s, I had a paper route. And we delivered newspapers on our bike.
Mm.
But we had three newspapers in our little town. And the biggest route was from Freeport, which was the closest town that had a newspaper. And then there was a morning and an evening newspaper from Rockford.
Mm.
And so I first delivered the Rockford afternoon paper, waiting for the high school kid to graduate so I could deliver the morning paper because there were morning papers. So then I delivered that all until my middle years of high school.
Wow.
But what I remember about, I met a lot of nice people on the paper route, and it was getting up early in the morning, and my mom would take me in the car if it was raining or if it was really snowing. So, but normally it was on a bike. But I sold enough newspapers when we had a contest to get a bus trip into Chicago to go to my first Cubs game.
Oh, wow.
And I've gone to many Cubs games ever since then. But I still remember that first one.
That's great.
That I worked hard to attend.
That's great. That's a great story. All right,
yes,
Daryl.
Indeed.
Thanks for the call, sir.
All right. Take care, Nick.
Take care. There you go. That's nice, man. We used to have a neighborhood paper called The Booster, and we had that delivered to our place. And the kid would come by and collect money. I guess it was once a week. He would collect the dough. And The Booster. The offices of The Booster were on Lincoln. If I'm not mistaken, right near where Belmont Bowl used to be, or that's on Belmont. But it was Belmont near Lincoln. But it was like right near there. That's where they published The Booster, and that was just a small like little neighborhood newspaper, just in our area. We used to get that delivered too. And it was interesting that you're talking about how there used to be, you know, a morning edition and an afternoon edition of a lot of newspapers. So some people would be delivering papers in the morning, some people in the afternoon, and you would have the afternoon news. And that was always, you know, kind of interesting. You get your sports scores that way. That was how you know, the afternoon newspapers. So Joe Biden had a paper route. America's 47th vice president, used a paper childhood paper route to hone his people skills and work on his speech mechanics. Biden had a noticeable stutter as a boy. In 1955, his family relocated to Mayfield, Delaware, and Biden got himself a paper route shortly after that. The job presented him with a lingual challenge at first. I lived in dread of Saturday mornings when I had to go collect from people I was just getting to know, Biden has said. To make small talk with his assigned subscribers go smoothly, young Biden learned to anticipate the conversation to come. Then he'd rehearse some sentences that might prove useful in the discussion. My next-door neighbor was a big Yankees fan. I'd always check the Yankee box score because I knew he'd ask, and I knew I'd have to say something about without making a fool of myself, Biden recalled in his autobiography. I had played out the entire conversation before I opened the front door. How about that? Here's Helen on WGN. Hi, Helen.
Yes.
Hi.
No good memories about passing newspapers.
No?
No. 80 papers Monday through Friday, 40 on Sundays for $8 every 2 weeks.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
That was the Tribune and the Sun-Times.
Yeah.
And that's when papers were heavy.
Yeah.
No. Cheap labor, no money. Oh, my God, it was horrible.
Yeah, it was not. I mean, I did it, too, for a while, and it was both Trib and Sun-Times that we were delivering. And I mean, and maybe even maybe it was even Chicago Today. Does anybody remember? Do you guys remember Chicago Today?
That was an afternoon paper,
that was an afternoon paper.
It?
Yeah, I think afternoon. Yeah, it was. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Chicago Today was an afternoon paper.
Oh, yeah, that was horrible. $1.38 every 2 weeks for the Tribune.
Oh,
that was 7 days a week for that.
Yeah.
People would give you $1.50 and want the 12 cents change.
Mm. Yeah, they want
God,
their change.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Wow, they want their change. They want their 12 cents. It's very important.
Yeah.
All right.
No.
Helen,
oh, sorry,
Helen, thanks for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Helen didn't like having a paper route. Yeah, that's really dead. That really is like, that's terrible money right there, man, for the work. Because it's pretty time consuming and you got to get up really, really early. And so Sherry says, I've been listening to WGN while delivering papers in Lexington, Kentucky for 15 years. Thanks for keeping me company. Happy to do so. Dino says, I deliver the New York Times and the Financial Times. I do 180 stops a night on the north and northwest side. Man, that's a lot of stops. 180 stops? Boy, we really do keep these people company. They really do. I mean, you know, a lot of these newspaper deliverers are out there right now. Yeah. No one kept me company when I was delivering paper. The loud clanging of metal wheels on the streets, the side streets.
I would wake up about 2 a.m. When I first moved to Chicago in 97, that's the first job I made money at was, I actually didn't have the job. A friend of mine had the route. It was about $1,000 a month, cash. No taxes were taken out.
Uh-huh.
But it was a big route. You had to have a car. And he got tired of it, and I was looking for work, so I took the route from him. You know, and yeah, you'd have to get up about 2 a.m. You have to go to a site. I was out in the far northwest suburbs. I'd go to Elgin, pick the papers up, and then I'd be down about 8 a.m.
Wow, man.
It was tough.
That is. You know,
it's a pretty tough job.
It is, and it's a long morning, too, man. You know, when you're out there, especially.
A lot of people do it in addition to, you know, to supplement their income. They'll get up at 2 a.m, do that until 8, and then they'll go to a day job.
Yeah.
That's how my old baseball coach afforded tuition for his kids to go to high school, that he picked up that job from 2 to 8, and then he'd go from, you know, the end of the route to his 8:30 start.
I mean, a grand will go a long way, you know, paying bills or whatever.
Right. Well, that's a long day.
Or though. Whatever, you know, yeah.
That
may not all be a grand, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a long day, though. You know, all right. You know, you see who else had a paper route? Earl the Pearl Monroe, inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame in 1990. Monroe was a prolific scorer, who spent 13 seasons in the NBA and helped the New York Knicks win their most recent world championship in 1973. A native Philadelphian, Monroe entered the newspaper carrier game with some parental help. Monroe wrote in his autobiography, quote, in junior high, I had a paper route that my mother, Rose, and I built up into until it was profitable. On deliveries, the teen would often be accompanied by his mom. She did everything to help me when I was growing up, Monroe said. She really didn't want me being out there by myself. Oh. Yeah. I wonder if he had the big, crazy wooden cart. These things were ancient, too. You know, and I was delivering papers when I was doing this. It was like 76, 77. And these things had to be 30 years old. These they'd be from the 40s. Just, you know, like falling apart and just loud and ridiculous. I'm really surprised that we didn't get, like, arrested. We didn't, like, the cops didn't come and say, hey, you want to stop making all that noise? Because it was literally like 4:30 in the morning. We're not going down the street with these ridiculously loud carts. How about this? Kathy Ireland. Kathy Ireland had a paper route. Kathy Ireland was one of the most recognizable supermodels of the 80s, posing for Sports Illustrated on several occasions before launching what turned into a global licensing company valued at over $2 billion. Her success in the business world was foreshadowed by a historic newspaper delivering stint. Ireland was raised in Santa Barbara, California, where at age four she used to sell hand-painted rocks. Been a businesswoman her whole life. When she was about 10, an advertisement calling for new paper boys appeared in one of the local newspapers. Are you the boy for the job? It asked. Young Ireland responded by writing a pointed letter to the editor. No, I'm not the boy for the job. I'm the girl for the job, and I can do it just as well as any boy. Well, good for her. I think I deserve a chance. And she got one. Ireland became Santa Barbara's first ever paper girl. By the time she retired from that gig, the budding mogul made 120,000 newspaper deliveries and was voted her district's carrier of the year for three consecutive years.
Well, she left an impression on me because you said her name, and that was about almost 40 years ago now, and I remembered her immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, Kathy Ireland was, you know.
Stunning. Yeah, beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, legendary model. But I didn't know she was, I didn't know she'd been, you know, such an entrepreneur from such a young age, selling hand-painted rocks. There's something for you. At 4 years old? 4 years old, I had my finger up my nose, you know, and I was watching the Three Stooges. That's what I was doing at four. I certainly wasn't an entrepreneur. I wasn't selling anything. Couldn't even count when I was four. All right. Let's take a break here for some weather, and then we'll come back and talk more about people who've had paper routes, and if you've ever had one, and you're on one now, 312-981-7200 is that time of morning. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on, and we have the Blackhawks Express, an unfortunate one from last night's game, to play back as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We've been talking about famous people who actually had paper routes. Many of us did, and some of us didn't really enjoy it, and some people hated it and didn't even make a lot of money, but did it anyway. Next year is Alan Bean. As the lunar module pilot of NASA's Apollo 12 mission, the late Alan Bean became the fourth person to walk on the moon in 1969. He also spent 59 days orbiting Earth during a 1973 Skylab excursion and had a celebrated artistic career as well. A Texan by birth, Bean spent much of his youth delivering papers for his hometown at Fort Worth Star-Telegram. My first route was in the early mornings, Bean recalled. Every day was the same. I pulled myself out of a warm bed and pedaled up dark streets on my bicycle, loaded with folded newspapers. It was a lonely job, too. It seemed that if there were no one else, it seemed like there was no one else in the world, he said. And poignant words coming from an astronaut. You know, that's another thing about it, is that it is, you know, it is a lonely job when you're out there, you know. I mean, you get to hang out with the guys in the storefront, you know, but when you're out on your own, when you're out on the route, you're by yourself, and it's late at night, or, well, however you want to look at it, early in the morning. Nobody is out on the street. Yeah, it is. It is. It's kind of a sad. It's kind of a lonely job. How about this? Bob Hope had a paper route. Hey, mind if I play through? That's my Bob Hope, Dan.
No. I thought he walked in.
Yeah.
Like spies like us.
That's right. Doctor, 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 doctor. Long before he became synonymous with Hollywood road comedies, Leslie Towns' Bob Hope was helping to support his family as a Cleveland paperboy. He later returned to the job while struggling to break into the entertainment industry. At 8, I had a paper route. At 12, I worked in my brother's butcher shop. At 18, I was out on the road singing and dancing. And at 19, I was back on my paper route, Bob Hope wryly noted. Selling newspapers from street corners was another revenue stream for the aspiring performer. While working on his stand on 102nd Street in Cleveland, Hope managed to brush shoulders with the highest of high rollers. I had one regular customer whose name I didn't know, and all I knew was that he snapped his face open and shut like a wrinkled old coin purse. One day, the mystery patron needed change for a dime, so Hope ran across to the store, across the street, to procure some pennies from the local department store. According to Hope, when I came back, the customer said, "Young man, I'm going to give you some advice. If you want to succeed in business, trust nobody. Never give credit and always take the change on hand. That way, you won't miss any customers while you're going for it." A few moments later, a passing inspector came up to the stand and asked, "Do you know who that man was?" "No," Hope said. "He's only the richest man in the world," announced the inspector. "That's John D. Rockefeller Sr." Well, that's a story. Wow. How about this? James A. Michener had a paper route. The author of over 40 books, which sold upwards to 75 million copies. Michener is best remembered for Tales of the South Pacific, inspired by his service in the United States Navy. The novel won the 1948 Pulitzer Prize and was later adapted into a popular Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, South Pacific. Long before his travels, young Michener was an enthusiastic paperboy from 7th through 12th grade, working in his childhood home of Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Michener distributed various Philadelphia-based newspapers along five different routes. I can still remember the residents of certain entire streets and I had served the longest, he wrote in 1992. My paper route gave me an insight into the complexity of life in a small town that not many boys had acquired. Oh. All right. Let's see. Here's Mitch on WGN. Hey, Mitch.
How's it going?
Hi.
So, my son and I, back in the, it would have been, I don't know, 20-some years ago, he had either like 83 or 85 papers over here in Northwest Indiana. And at the time, I had a little Toyota truck, and he was really, really good on rollerblades.
Oh.
And we had a board, and I would sit up with him, and he would have the papers done. He'd have them all folded and rubber band and in a stack. And, my vehicle would be pulled around. He was big enough he could actually pull the truck around just out, you know, from the garage. He'd load it up. And anyhow, we could do 83 papers in about 40 minutes because he would hold on to the back of the truck and get, you know, 3-4 papers in his arm. And he would just, I'd go maybe, you know, 10 miles an hour, 15 miles an hour, depending on the little neighborhood we were in. And he would just fly up the driveways and down the driveways and deliver 3 or 4 papers at a time. And I knew exactly where to be with the car. And again, we could, our best was right at 40 minutes for 83 papers.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, you know, people would love to have us arrested for that. You know, they turn it into child abuse of some type. But, I mean, we did it very, very safe. There was no traffic at the time. We were doing it at like 3 in the morning.
Right.
And not only was it fun, but, you know, it was kind of a bonding thing. He did the lion's share of the work. All I had to do was crawl out of bed just in time to drive him and then crawl back into bed.
Yeah.
But it was very cool. Good for him. Good for me. And we still tell people about it. They just go, you know, they kind of shake their head at the craziness, but it was never an issue. He was really good on rollerblades.
That's it. Wow, that's impressive. That's really impressive, Mitch. All right, man, have a good day.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. Well, look at this. It's Eddie Volkman, everybody. Eddie Volkman is with us. Hey, Eddie.
Hey, what's up, Nick?
How you doing, man?
Good. I grew up in Glenview, and I had a friend who had a paper route, and he was going on summer vacation and asked me if I'd fill in for him. And it was an afternoon paper. I forgot what it was, in the 70s something. And it was the summertime, so I didn't have the hardship of waking up early or trudging through snow or anything.
Yeah.
So I thought, this is a piece of cake. Well, the third day, I was out delivering the papers, and I didn't have them wrapped, and suddenly the skies opened up, and there was a downpour, and how could I possibly have known that was going to happen, because my dad was only Harry Fulton.
You got no excuse, man.
So I'm scampering to get these things up, and I think, what am I going to do, just open the screen doors and kind of throw them in and hope, but even the run from my bicycle up the driveway was, you know, it was coming down so hard that I just threw this soggy, soaking thing. And unfortunately, one little old lady was waiting at the door for her paper and just read me the riot act about it.
What am I going to do with this?
So, never again. Yeah. I went back to being a spoiled kid mowing the lawn for money.
There you go. And that was it. That was it. And you know what? I just find it really ironic. It's the weather that did you in, Eddie.
Yeah, that'll teach me.
That's right, man. All right, take care, Eddie. Thanks, buddy. All right, there you go. Bye. Eddie Volkman, everybody. It's no excuse, man. When your dad is Harry Volkman, you should know what the damn weather is. Oh, man. That's funny. All right. Why don't we take a break here? Everybody hang on. We got the news coming up. And we'll talk a little bit more about the paper routes. We've got some other stories to talk about. And it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. And we'll talk more right after we take a break for the news. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiCiglio here on 720 WGN. Dan, they just showed that Hail Mary pass. He was right there. He was right at the goal line.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh. Hell of a way to end that game, though, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. Anyway, I had not seen it. That was the first. It's the first time I saw it. So anyway, hey, it's Nick DiCiglio here on 720 WGN. How did you do, by the way? Your fantasy?
You know, I don't know. The key games were last night and tonight for my opponents. So okay. I was ahead going into those matches, but those are the money games this week for me.
All right, cool. Hey, it's Nick DiCiglio here. Welcome back, everybody. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're also going to have we'll replay the Blackhawks Express from a very unfortunate loss last night for the Hawks. But we always play the Express after the morning after a game. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about paper routes. It seems like so many people had them, and we've been reading about how some of these famous people, very famous people, had paper routes. And let's see. We got some texts coming in. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Carrie says, it was my favorite job I had in high school. I was driving around 4 a.m. listening to Chicago Ed and Marty McNeely doing the news. Then I went to school. Yeah, that's pulling some double duty right there. Every once in a while, I mostly did it on the weekends, but every once in a while I would do it before school, and that would wipe me out completely. Wipe me out completely. Kind of like hanging out with Dana DiLorenzo for like 6 hours. That'll do that to you too. Trevor from Antioch said, I'm on a paper route right now. All right, Trevor. Mike from Novak Construction says, I delivered the Chicago today. I remember my hands being covered in ink after putting rubber bands on the papers. Ah, yes. The old covered in ink fingers. Oh, man. All right. Just a couple of more people who had paper routes, who were very famous people who had paper routes. Tom Cruise had a paper route. Raised in a less than affluent household, Cruise turned to newspaper carrying as a means of picking up extra cash. When I was 13, the actor told Sports Illustrated. Why was he being interviewed for Sports Illustrated? Was it because he was in a football movie?
I think he wrestled in high school or something. Didn't he, Dan? Do you know?
Oh, I think he was a star athlete in high school.
Yeah, he's an athlete.
Yeah, I just didn't know that he was interviewed.
Don't know
for
if that's for
Sports interview. Illustrated.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, when he was interviewed for Sports Illustrated, was Kathy Ireland on the cover? You see how I'm bringing this all?
That's why you have a plaque.
That's exactly right. Let's see. I had a paper route and paid $50 for my first go-kart and $75 for my first motorcycle. He paid $50 for a go-kart? To help meet his delivery schedule, Cruz enlisted the aid of his younger sister, Cass. I always told her I'd pay her back. I bought her a car after risky business. Whoa! Yeah. Bought her a car after risky business. Yeah, made a lot of money from risky business. That movie made a lot of money. It made a lot of money for me, I can tell you that. I saw it many, many times in the theater. Here's Chad on WGN. Hi, Chad.
Hi.
Hi.
What do you want me to say?
Well, what did you call what did you call in to say?
I used to run a newspaper route up in the Edison Park area.
Oh, okay.
I worked at the only newspaper stand that's still in existence.
The newspaper stand is still in existence. Boy, there aren't many of those left, man.
Yeah, it's actually in Edison Park. It's Coggy's Newsstand.
Yeah.
I used to work there as a kid, and the place is still in business.
Wow. Yeah, you don't see that many. I mean, there aren't many newsstands left anymore.
No.
You know, especially the outdoor ones. And I know that there's a newspaper stand, that beautiful newspaper stand in Evanston, which is just fantastic. And then, Dan, the one at Six Corners is, like, indoors now, right? Because they used to have one outside.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, I knew they used to have one outside. I didn't know it was still there.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, no, those were the old days, man. With the old newspaper stands, they used to have them. They used to have them on every other block downtown. You know, in the Loop, they were everywhere. Chad, thanks for the call, man. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You know, when I started getting into movies and stuff, you know, and you know this, my dad would take me to movies every Sunday morning. We would go down to the Loop and see at least one or two movies every Sunday morning we would go. And when I started to show a real interest in movies, we would stop at the newspaper stand in the Loop, one of them, because like I said, there was one like every other block. And my dad would get me a copy of Variety, because I would start getting into, you know, like reading up on the movie business. And you know, all these years later, I do Box Office with Eric every week, and that's what that whole thing was. I would read the Box Office and see what some of the new movies that were coming out, and they would have movie reviews in there, and we would pick up a Variety. And we, you know, and I'm like the only like 10-year-old kid that was reading Variety. Like nobody my age read Variety. Like I'm like 10, 12 years old reading Variety. The dork. All right. Hey, Warren Buffett. He had a newspaper route. He's the third richest man in the world with an estimated net worth of $91.5 billion. And Buffett's remarkable investment acumen has earned the Nebraskan the nickname of the Oracle of Omaha. But the self-made billionaire got to start distributing newspapers on behalf of the Washington Post and other publications. You had to deliver them every day, including Christmas Day, Buffett had said, adding that on Christmas morning, his family would have to wait until I was done with my paper route for the festivities to start. At age 14, Buffett filed his first tax return, which reported that in 1944, he'd earned the equivalent of $8,221 in modern U.S. dollars. And given the nature of the job, the youngster knew he was able to write off the cost of his watch and various bicycle repairs as business expense. Wow. No wonder that guy's a billionaire. He knew to write that stuff off. That's pretty fantastic. And then finally, David Lynch had a paper route. Oh, boy. Auteur director David Lynch was so low on personal funds during the production of Eraserhead. Oh, come on. When he was making Eraserhead, he was delivering papers? On the production of Eraserhead, that he needed a couple of side hustles just to make ends meet. In addition to working as a part-time plumbing job, Lynch delivered copies of the Wall Street Journal. I built three sheds in my backyard during that period, he claims. They were made out of wood I found on my paper route. My route took me through two different trash areas, On trash nights, my route would take 2 hours instead of one because I stopped and sorted through the garbage. No wonder Eraserhead is such a weird movie. Jeez. Oh, man. So there's some famous people right there with your paper routes. Oh, we got more texts coming in. Dan says, a paper route was my first job, and I loved it. It instilled in me a good work ethic. My next job was a pizza delivery driver. I worked at a place called Geppetto's. For some reason, they hosted fashion shows there. It was crazy for me and my hormones. What? Crazy for me and my hormones.
Well, he's probably a young guy, and they're having fashion shows. And maybe there's some attractive models.
Yeah, I just think that's weird, though. Not weird that he, his hormones. That's what happens when you're like 14 years old. You're all hormones. Just one giant hormone.
Till about 25, I guess. Right.
Gary
if
says,
you're "Lucky."
I'm
right.
Gary says, I've been delivering newspapers for 14 years. WGN has kept me company. I had over 460 deliveries yesterday. The best part are the Christmas tips. It's nice to like your job, man, if he digs that job. 414 area code says, I had a route in Milwaukee when I was 12. I actually learned to drive Sunday mornings when I was done. Dad would let me drive the 91 Chrysler minivan. And 815 area code says, I delivered the Tribune and the Chicago Daily News, 65 papers a day. Sunday trib stuffing sucked. Yes, it did. Rain and snow sucked. Yes, it did. But the worst part was the collecting. I lived in a neighborhood far away from town, so I could use my 90cc AMF Harley Davidson. It was the same bike that Kelly had in the first Bad News Bears movie. That's pretty cool. All right, there you go. Paper routes, everybody. Oh, boy. All right. Dan, do you remember the Sears catalog?
I do.
Yeah. Vic, what about you? Do you guys ever hear the Sears catalog?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're gonna reminisce a little bit about that. We'd love to hear from people about the Sears catalog, what you ordered from there. It was a big deal, man. Big deal. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Coming up right after we break here for weather. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and my main man, Steve Cochran, at 6 for your morning drive. If you would like to join us, we're going to be talking about the Sears mail order catalog. And some interesting history about this catalog as well. But we also want to if we want to talk to you guys about your memories involving the Sears catalog. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. It's sad that all the Sears are closing down and they're filing for bankruptcy. The 142 stores came, the retail's giant collapse in recent years. Still, the news inspired a wave of nostalgia for a company that sold an ideal of middle-class life to generations of Americans. I remember when we get the Sears catalog, it was kind of a big deal. Like, we'd get it, and then I would look through it, and I would fold the pages where the toys were that I wanted for Christmas. I'd go through. Did you ever do that?
Oh, 100%.
Sure. Yeah.
Did you do it? You did it too, Vic?
Yep.
Yeah. I think everybody did that. I think everybody folded the pages or at least marked the toys that they wanted.
Yeah, it was before the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but the Sears catalog was huge, and it was a big deal. I remember when it would show up at the house. You know, we'd get the Sears catalog, and everybody would be excited about it, and you'd look through it, and, you know, you could order whatever you wanted in that big, thick catalog. But here's a little piece of history, though. A lesser-known aspect of Sears' 125-year history, however, is how the company revolutionized rural black Southerners' shopping patterns in the late 19th century, subverting racial hierarchies by allowing them to make purchases by mail or over the phone and avoid the blatant racism that they faced in small country stores. What people don't know is just how radical the catalog was in the era of Jim Crow. Lewis Hyman, an associate professor of history at Cornell University, said he wrote in a Twitter thread that was shared by over 7,000 times on Monday in wake of the news of Sears' demise last Monday. By allowing African Americans in southern states to avoid price gouging and condescending treatment at their local stores, he wrote the catalog, quote, undermined white supremacy in the rural South. As historians of the Jim Crow era have documented, purchasing everyday household goods was often an exercise in humiliation for African Americans living in the South. Before the advent of the mail order catalog, rural black Southerners typically only had the option of shopping at white-owned general stores, often run by the owner of the same farm where they worked as sharecroppers. Those store owners frequently determined what African Americans could buy by limiting how much credit they would extend. While country stores were one of the few places where whites and blacks routinely mingled, store owners fiercely defended the white supremacist order by making black customers wait until every white customer had been served and forcing them to buy lower quality goods. A black man who needed clothing received a shirt good enough for a darkie to wear, is what they'd say, while a black family low on provisions could have only the lowest grade flour. This is Grace Elizabeth Hale wrote in an essay that was published in Jumpin' Jim Crow, Southern Politics for Civil War, From Civil War to Civil Rights. In 1894, Sears Roebuck and Company began selling out the 322-page illustrated catalogs. The year before, Congress had passed the Rural Free Delivery Act, making it possible for the Chicago-based retailer to easily reach communities across the rural South. Notably, the company made an effort to accommodate customers who were barely literate, enacting a policy that the company would fill any order it received regardless of the format. So country folks who were once too daunted to send requests to other purveyors could write on a scrap of paper asking humbly for a pair of overalls large size. That's Bitter Southerner, a publication of the Southern Identity, explained this past summer. And even if it was written in broken English and nearly illegible, the catalog, the overalls would be shipped. And more importantly, the catalog allowed for anonymity, ensuring that black and white customers would be treated exactly the same. That's fascinating. That really is. A lot of history there. But yeah, man, that catalog, we used to go nuts when the catalog showed up. Let's see. Here's Ron on WGN. Hi, Ron.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Nick, am I imagining things? I remember going to Montgomery Ward's where the Tribune Freedom Center used to be and picking up stuff and their catalog center and stuff. Do you remember that?
Montgomery Ward's?
Am I going a little too...
I remember Montgomery Ward's catalog as well. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, but they also had a big warehouse right on where the Tribune Freedom Center is now.
Hmm. And that's where the big warehouse was? You can pick up stuff there?
Yes, I can remember that. When I was a kid, I don't think it was, it went over like in the 50s. But that's my recollection.
Oh, okay.
But I can't wait for your dad's joke.
Okay, it's coming up in just a few minutes.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, Ron,
maybe
take
somebody
care,
out there remembers.
Okay, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, the warehouse for Marshall Field, which was on, was that Belmont?
That sounds right.
That was there for years. Like the where I want to say was it like maybe Diversey and like maybe Cicero or something? Wasn't it like in that area? It was there for a long time, and that was like the outlet warehouse for Marshall Fields, and that was a real popular place too. So, yeah, I remember we ordered a lot of clothes from the Sears catalog. You know, Tough Skins. Do you remember Tough Skins, Dan?
I don't.
Those are jeans that were sold at Sears. They were called Tough Skins. Yeah, we used to get, I would get some back to school stuff we would order from the catalog. The Sears catalog. Yeah. It was fun times. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking Sears catalog and other memories here on WGN.
Yeah.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. Yeah. And it is... right, we're here till 5 a.m. And yeah, it's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we've got a Blackhawks Express from last night's unfortunate Blackhawks loss. That's coming up as well. So we've been talking about the Sears catalog and some of the great history, surprising history that I didn't know about connected with the Sears catalog and what they did for the African American community in the South, which is really pretty amazing. And then we're just, remembering the Sears catalog. And I know we've, you know, like I said, all of us, we just mentioned that whenever we got the Sears catalog, we went right to the toy set, right to the toy section, and either marked or folded the pages with all the toys that we wanted for Christmas. I think that was something that was done in, you know, in every household, you know. So let's see. So we got some texts coming in. If you guys want to join us, we're just remembering some of this really cool stuff from that time period as Sears is closing down. I got to say, Dan, when they started taking the signage off the side of the building at Six Corners, I got very sad. They were doing it at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and you know it's not very far from where I live, and I saw some footage online, and I just got sad.
Sure.
You know,
that wasn't my Sears. I was more upset when the Hats Plus went out of business just down the street.
That whole section, everything is closed there. I think, with the exception, I think there's a hair salon that's still open, and I think that's it. I think everything else is like there's a spa, like a hair salon slash spa, which is on the second floor. That's right on the corner. But everything else in that, all those storefronts are empty now. And that Hats Plus, man, that's where you got your fedora.
That's right.
Yeah. The Sears that we used to go to, we went to Six Corners every once in a while, but I think the Sears that we went to the most when I was a kid was the one on Lawrence and Ravenswood.
Sure.
That's the one that we went to the most because, I mean, we lived at Addison and Ravenswood, so that would be the one that we went to the most. But we would go to the Six Corners one as well. But, yeah, 142 stores gone. You know, and I realized this, you know, that I'm... You know, I'm to blame as much as anybody else. I mean, click and it's delivered right to you, you know. And I have Amazon Prime, which means I don't have to pay for, you know, I get free shipping. It's just really convenient, you know. And I'm sorry. I'm sad that those stores are closing. A lot of the brick and mortar stores are, you know, are going by the wayside, which makes me sad. You know, people losing their jobs and stuff. But I'm as guilty as the next person, though, man. When you can just like. Do it at a computer, click, boom, bang, and then it shows up at your door. And I always feel bad about it. So, 630 area code said, the Christmas wish book was cool. Yeah, the old Sears Christmas wish book. 262 area code, Nick says, who are you kidding? You were looking in the lingerie section. Oh, yeah, no, there's no question about it. There's no question about. I'm not gonna lie. We looked in the Sears, the lingerie section in the Sears, the bra section. There's no question about it. Robert says, coincidentally, I used earrings from my paper route. Oh, earnings earrings, earrings. I used earrings from my paper route. I used to wear very fancy earrings when I would go out and deliver the paper. I used. Earnings from my paper route to buy a mini bike from Sears. I still have it, and it runs because Sears sold quality products at a reasonable price. I still have my Craftsman's tools, too. 773 area code says, I worked my way through college by working at the Sears catalog outlet store on the southwest side near Midway Airport. Lou says, if you go to wishbookweb.com, you can check them out from 1937 to 1996. It's pretty cool. Oh, that sounds fun. That sounds pretty cool. I'd love to check that out. Wishbookweb.com. Wishbookweb.com, where you can see catalogs that date back to 1937. Wow. Here's Brian on WGN. Hi, Brian.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Something else you could buy in Sears was, after World War II, at the big building boom, you could buy a house in Sears.
Oh.
The catalog. And I actually used to live in one on the west side of Aurora. There's a bunch of them, and they're considered a historic thing now.
Is that
right? And, yeah, they were, it was small A-frame, two bedrooms. It was really nice.
Oh, that's really cool. And you lived in one, huh?
Yeah, I did, right on the west side of Aurora. It was really cool.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's great. Now, you know, we're going to miss Sears, I'm telling you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you too.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
Sure, brother.
Okay, man. See, lived in a Sears house. That's all right, man. Here is Muriel on WGN. Hi, Muriel.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm in LaSalle County. I remember as a child, I'm 80 years old now, but as a child, when you'd go to the Sears store in the springtime, you could hear the baby chicks in the back room because they would deliver live chicks for people to order.
Wow. I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you probably, you're in the city, so
yeah.
When you're in a more rural area, you could order live baby chicks.
Wow. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
Baby chicks
thank
at
you.
Sears. Okay. Thank you, Muriel.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard that before. That's all right, though, man. You get some, stop by Sears, get a hammer and some baby chicks. And some tough skins. I can't believe you don't remember tough skins, man.
Coincidentally, this text just in. You mentioned tough skins. My buddy Marty was one of the tough skin kids who slid around the bases. His sister Robin was from End of Days with Arnold Schwarzenegger and the female detective in The Mentalist.
Robin Tunney.
Yeah.
How about, what? Who she said her brother?
So this texter's, but yeah, her brother Marty was also an actor in the Tough Skin Kids ad.
Wow, I didn't know that. I love Robin Tunney.
Tom Tunney.
Tom Tunney, yeah, and he's like
he's in Wrigleyville. Dolly.
Wrigleyville,
he's
that's
the
right.
Alderman of the Wrigleyville district.
That's
yeah.
right. Here's Charlie on WGN. Hi, Charlie.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just remembering about that Sears on Ravenswood. I lived 6900 North on Western, and my mom would take me shopping there for suits and all kinds of clothing.
Yeah.
And as I grew up, I purchased a saw, a 10-inch table saw, and a layaway plan, and I worked at a company in the city there, and eventually I got that paid off, and then I got a 6-inch joiner and got that paid off. And one time when I was maybe 12 years old or maybe 14 years old, I went and bought my dad a hammock, a steel. I went all down the Sears all by myself there.
Nice.
And got this hammock in this box, and I had to carry this heavy thing because it was all steel tubing and that.
Right.
All the way home. And he was very surprised, and he used it quite a bit, but I have many memories of that.
Yeah,
store.
I bet, man. I bet. That's great. Yeah. All right, Charlie, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, take care. Yeah. A hammock. Very cool. 815 area code and the 630 area code and the 773 area code said the outlet store was at Diversey in Pulaski. It's now a Cermak grocery store. Olson Rug had the waterfalls there. Yeah, I remember that. I knew it was around that area. I was close. 847 area code says don't forget about service merchandise. Oh yeah, at the hip. Service merchandise, man. Got to wait by that conveyor belt to get your item that's in the back. You remember that, Dan?
I wasn't around when I was going there, but I remember you telling that story. It's pretty awesome.
It's like there's catalogs in there. You go, you look through the catalog, you're in the store, you look through the catalog, you order it, and they go in the back, and then you got to go wait to pick it up, and there's conveyor belts, and your item will come out on the conveyor belt, and then you pay for it, and you get it. And service merchandise you could order from the catalogs as well. Boy, service merchandise. When did that one close down? That's been gone for many years. What's there now?
Indoor miniature golf place.
Oh, okay. Indoor miniature golf.
2002 was the last year of service merchandise.
Service merchandise. Yeah. Yeah, that was we used to go there a lot to the service merchandise when we hung out at the hip. I don't know where's the Harlem Irving Plaza. I don't know. You have any idea?
Got me. Nah.
Hey, you know, we just drove past the hip not too long ago, my folks and I. What does Rolling Stone sell now?
They sell actual records.
They do.
So they do. That's where I go, because like, one of the benefits of buying Eileen a turntable for Christmas a couple years ago is that the record is the perfect second gift. You know how you always have to get the big gift. Record is a perfect second gift. So that's where I go anytime we've got an anniversary or birthday or holiday or something. I go to
Rolling. I just haven't been in there in years. Yeah. And I know that, you know, nobody buys CDs anymore or anything like that.
I mean, they still have some CDs, but the majority, you know, like the walls are still CDs and the tables on the inside are
vinyl
records. Yeah.
I used to, man, oh man, I can't tell you the number of money, the amount of money I spent in that place. I'm not kidding, man. We used to go there all the time. My friends and I used to go there. Like, I'm not exaggerating when I say we would go there 3-4 nights a week to Rolling Stones. Like, they knew us there. And they had, you know, right in the front, I don't know if you remember, but right in the front they used to have the bargain bins where the albums were like $3.99 or $4.99. I blew a lot of money. You know, I'd get my Jewel paycheck and then I'd just blow it all at Rolling Stone. I spent a lot of money and a lot of time there. And it's still, I mean, it's, you know, it's still open. It's, I'm assuming business is really good. It's, you know, it's good enough that it's still around. We drove past there and there seemed to be cars in front. So that's a great store. That was a cool store. Legendary record store right there. All right. I remember they used to rent videos. You remember that?
I do remember that, yeah.
They used to rent videos in the back. You go in the back and you can rent videos. And then they stopped renting videos. And then they started selling their pre-used tapes for like nothing. So I bought a bunch of movies from there, VHS copies of movies that had been, you know, obviously rented by other people. So they were used, but they were like really cheap. I remember I got The China Syndrome with Michael Douglas and Jane Fonda and Jack Lemmon, which is a great movie. So, all right. Let's take a break here. We've got the weather here, and then after the weather, my dad will call up and tell a joke, and we'll have the Blackhawks Express, which is not a very good one, but it's going to be played nonetheless.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro. Ah!
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Hey, what'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. Coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and then after that will be Steve Cochran with your morning drive. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. All right, it's Monday morning. You heard the theme. That means that my dad calls in and tells a joke to get your week off, your work week off with a laugh. He's been doing this for a really long time, and let's welcome my dad to the show to tell his joke. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good.
How's Ma?
How are you?
How's Ma?
Good.
Good. All right. Got a joke.
A young man asks his father, who is a preacher, can I borrow the family car? Only if you get your hair cut. He says, why, asks his son. Moses had long hair. So did Samson and Jesus. The dad replies, and they walked everywhere.
All right. All right.
That's a good one, Dad.
Thank you.
That's a good one. All right, man.
All right, Nick.
Talk to you soon.
All right, have a good day.
See you later. There's my dad. They walked everywhere. They did. All right.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
They'll do it again next week on every Monday morning, my dad calls in and tells a joke right at this time. So we'll do it again next week. All right. We were talking about the Sears catalog and other memories and stuff like that. We got a ton of texts here. Let's wrap up the show with these. 815 area code said, Sears sent out a separate Christmas catalog every fall. It wasn't as big. My best gift ever was the Green Army men with Jeeps and tanks and a landscape table spread. There you go. 847 area code says, I'm 75. We used to get the Sears catalogs in the mail a few times a year. There was a spring catalog, fall, and a smaller Christmas catalog. My sisters and I used to cut out paper doll families, a dad, a mom, and a kids, out of the older catalogs when the new ones arrived. We would cut out beds, dressers, washing machines, and make a whole house of necessities that you need for your family. That's fun. 224 area code says, there's a Sears house on Lake Avenue in Wilmette, and it's really, really cool. Carol says that Vincent Price art collection was at Sears. Oh, that's cool. Why don't I remember that? 815 area code says Sears had the best warm cashews. 630 area code says don't forget McDade catalog store. 8708 area code says, yeah, Tom Tunney is their uncle. Right. My mom was raised in Tennessee. They ordered baby chicks through the catalog, and the mailman would deliver them. When the catalog was no good, they would use it as in the outhouse. 502 area code says, speaking of old places, how about Woolworth? And 217 area code says, Sears also made barns around 1900. 630 area code says, when I'm in third and fifth grades, my parents had a gift store on Milwaukee Avenue, just south of the movie theater near Six Corners. When I was in seventh grade, my family moved to an apartment about two blocks north of the Lawrence Avenue Sears. So you were around Sears for a long time. And then finally, I'm 36, and I still love to buy CDs, and it drives me nuts when you can't buy them anywhere except a few at Target. Everything is online, though. All right. All right. There you go, everybody. Thanks for your participation. We're going to take a break, and we'll tell you what's coming up on the show tomorrow.